How do you get the news and information that you trust? When you can access information 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, do you still need reporters, editors, and fact checkers to help you understand the big stories of the day? Is it important to have newspapers, online, and over-the-air newscasts? What happens when communities lose their news service? We're discussing that big flashlight that we call journalism today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medications prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. The Alaska Dispatch News, formerly the Anchorage Daily News, is in trouble. The paper's owner, Alice Rogoff, is in Chapter 11 bankruptcy proceedings. And although potential buyers are trying to move ahead with purchasing the ADN and keeping it operating, it isn't yet clear whether they will prevail. We'll talk more about that. So what would it mean if the biggest daily newspaper in the state, in the largest city, folded? Here in the studio to discuss it are some former Anchorage Daily News reporters and columnists. Michael Carey, columnist and editorial page editor for the former ADN. Hi, Michael.
Hi there.
Thanks so much for being here. And Julia O'Malley is also a former reporter and columnist for ADN and is in the studio.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Julia. Also in the studio is Paula Banquero. Paula is the UAA professor and head of the journalism department for UAA. Full disclosure, Paula is also on Alaska Public Media's Community Advisory Board. We'll talk more about what disclosure means later, but hello, Paula. Thanks for being here.
Hi, nice to be here.
Also, we'd like to know what you think, Alaskans. We, of course, in the studio think journalism is important because we're journalists. But what do you think? Give us a call. If you get your news and information from other sources that you trust more than the professional services that we represent and work for, the number statewide is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. If you're calling in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us talk@alaskapublic.org. We're going to be joined in a little while for a few minutes by retired Anchorage Police Department Public Information Officer Dave Parker for a few minutes by phone to get his perspective, the perspective of someone outside of a newsroom, but who worked very closely with reporters so that we have a little more context to this conversation and about why working with reporters to get information to the public from his perspective has been an important endeavor. Michael, I want to start with you since you win the prize for longevity in newsrooms.
That just means I'm old.
It's a prize, Michael.
Thank you.
You attended some of the court proceedings in
this
bankruptcy case. Tell us where things are at now. Is the paper going to survive? And if so, what's going to change for this business?
Well, the paper has passed its first markers. The Binkleys were approved to add some desperately needed cash, more than $1 million, I believe, or $1 million, to keep the paper going on a day-to-day basis. Eventually, the parties will appear back in bankruptcy court, and there'll be some kind of bid for their ownership. There's been rumors that there might be other bidders, but it seems very far-fetched to me. It'd be very difficult to come in at this point. And what would you be buying? The assets of the Dispatch as it now stands are very limited.
So it does look like maybe the paper is going to survive, though, and stay open.
It does. Of course, the paper's been losing, $20,000 a day, $25,000 a day. And Ryan Binkley, who spoke to the employees and others who were there at the paper, said I guess it seems obvious, but it's also worth saying again, there are only two ways out of this. We either get more revenue or reduce costs.
Mm. Julia, you worked for the Anchorage Daily News for a long time. What were your thoughts when you heard that the paper was in this type of trouble, that possibly it wasn't going to survive?
Man, I saw this coming. I'll tell you what. You cannot buy... First of all, I mean, there were such a series of poor decisions that were made in purchasing the paper for too much money, selling the building with the press in it, expanding the staff without growing the revenue. The paper was profitable when it was purchased, but you can't just like double the staff and make lots of and invest in a lot of different areas without growing revenue. And I didn't see that happening. So to me, I was always mystified by how it kept on. And I think a lot of people just thought Alice is just paying for it, which we've now seen in the court proceeding that she just basically was writing personal checks to cover the cost of the paper. So it lasted for 3 years. And now, you know, Alice would like out, but there are a bunch of people sitting in that newsroom. There are a bunch of people who are delivering that paper. And also all of the people who are owed money who will are left holding the bag.
But your reaction when you considered the prospect that it might not be landing on your doorstep every morning?
Okay, I don't look at the paper on my doorstep. I actually, in fact, am not really a print reader. But to me, having a regional newspaper in Alaska seems really important. You know, print journalism, it has its own niche. The stories are longer form and they last in a way. They're sort of existing in a way that allows a lot of people to read them. The newspaper has the largest reach, so it is the largest forum for kind of a website, largest forum for communication for Alaskans and people outside of Alaska. So it's just a tremendous loss in terms of civic dialogue, not to mention, you know, all of the other benefits journalism provides, being a watchdog, you know, suing when people went suing the government for freedom of information. You know, I guess it's just a tremendous loss for the community.
Paula, you teach journalism. Your reaction when you thought that the paper might not survive?
Well, I think that the paper will survive, but maybe not in paper form. So, yes, I think it's interesting. We have sort of three generations here of journalists. I still receive the paper, and I'm an anomaly in my age group for receiving the paper. And part of what I like about it is that then my daughter can pick it up and look at the comics or look at the headlines and ask questions about it. But I think one thing that I tell students is the industry, of course, is changing. It's going to continue to change. And I think that the ADN will survive, but it will probably be in digital format only.
All right, we're going to go to the phones for a moment. Kyle Hopkins, another former Anchorage Daily News reporter. And Kyle, good morning. I think, didn't you work for the Dispatch also?
Basically, you know, I spent maybe 9 years at ADN, at the Anchorage Daily News, and I was at the combined Daily News Dispatch for a few months before I moved over to KTUU.
So what were your, we've been talking about reaction to the prospect. It looks as if the paper is going to survive in some form now, which is good news. Your thoughts about the prospects for the future for ADN and why it's important?
Well, you know, I covered the bankruptcy hearings a little bit a couple weeks ago and had been out of state for a couple weeks before that. And so was, I guess, maybe had been in denial, but was, you know, I was a little surprised at just how much money was being lost each day, even though if you look back at what's happened, it makes sense in retrospect because, you know, as Julia said, there, you know, the staff increased, the revenue didn't, and so there's nothing really to kind of make up that gap, you know. But I think even in the years that you know, in the last few years that Julia and I were at the paper, and that included a real contraction of the paper, you know, you saw you saw colleagues, you saw the newsroom getting smaller, you saw colleagues leaving or getting buyouts. And I think we always figured that, you know, we would continue the print product as long as we could, as long as it made sense, and that's what the advertisers wanted. But there was a real sense of trying to figure out online and how to figure out digital audiences, because that was going to be we had to kind of build that landing strip while we were in the air to try and land the plane on that kind of digital platform and have it be viable. And I don't think that's changed. I mean, I think that's everyone's doing that. You know, we're doing that at the TV station as well.
Do you think, Paula mentioned that maybe the paper won't survive as a paper, but will survive online. What are your thoughts about how that changes how the paper is perceived or its online entity, and how that may or may not work?
Well, I think, you know, I had always kind of privately assumed that at some point it wouldn't be a 7 days a week paper, you know, that maybe it'd be, you know, Wednesday, Sunday paper, you know, maybe to take advantage of kind of like grocery inserts and stuff in midweek, and then Sunday to kind of really have, you know, beautifully written stories and kind of big blowout features and stuff that you could showcase, and that would be the kind of print paper that people read throughout the week, you know, which is the way that I used to consume, like, the New York Times, for example. I just would get the Sunday and kind of read it throughout the week, and I could see people doing that. You know, it's sad to think of not getting the paper at your doorstep every day, but, you know, I also used to joke that, you know, that it's easy to imagine telling your kids, yeah, you know, Daddy used to go to work and we would write the stories and they would get printed on in the big printing press, and then somebody would drive it to people's houses, and then that's how people would get the news, and that would seem kind of incredible to them, you know, because that's
antiquated.
That's not the world they know. I mean, the good news is ADN has, it has a three-letter .com website. That's a really valuable commodity. You know, ADN.com is a really valuable commodity. They have a big audience. You know, they have a lot going for them. And so I think there's a lot of reasons to be hopeful. But that also doesn't detract from kind of, you know, the what's going to be, I think, a real hard decision-making process moving forward.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Kyle Hopkins, former ADNer, and now at Channel 2. Michael Carey, let's talk a little bit about the larger picture of journalism and where we're at today, especially. How have you, through the years, explained to people the distinction between what news organizations do and what purveyors of information and other material, and how has the conversation changed in the years that you've been doing this work?
Let's take a real concrete example from something that's happening right now, the Houston flood. The Houston Chronicle, a newspaper in Houston, is covering it very well. The New York Times has all kinds of people there. So is the Washington Post. The television networks are covering it intensely. They can do this. The New York Times can send as many people as they need to and even hire new people on a temporary basis to go to Houston or go to places that are important in the Houston story. Now, Breitbart News can produce all sorts of commentary or opinions about how the recovery is being managed and the various characters in there, but they're not going to send boatloads of reporters, literally, and neither are bloggers. Bloggers in Houston, I'm sure there's some people writing from their homes or from hotels who are doing a great job, but they just can't do this broad kind of coverage that the news organizations can do, and we should all be grateful for it.
And the conversation that you have with the public about the distinctions between what news organizations, you've been talking about some of those, how has that changed through the years? Have you seen that it's a more difficult conversation, or what's the tone like now?
Well, I think that there's always been a certain tension in the conversation. As my experience was, you hear more frequently from your critics or people who want to pick a bone with you than you do from people who are happy. But I mean, now with alternative sources of information, as my colleagues here know, people can call you up and quote you from many, many different sources and tell you why aren't you reporting this, or you're leaving out the most important thing. and they can source it in a way they didn't before, unless before they might say, but my personal experience is something like that.
Julia,
in some ways that's good too, because you get corrected and you're forced to look at other sources of information. So I think that can be valuable as well, but it's certainly not easy.
Kind of the audience crowdsourcing idea of of getting some feedback. And certainly we get a lot of that here. People will call. I always prefer if they don't resort to name calling, because it's easier to listen to their point if they're not calling us idiots. But that does happen on occasion as well when people are upset.
Well, and every once in a while you get this. I had a guy who called me up and gave me a very bad time about a column I wrote, was all over me. And the next day he called me back and it said, you know something, I reread your column and it's not nearly as bad as I thought it was now that I'm sober.
Ah.
There's that.
There is that. Yeah. Julia, how about for you, the conversation that you have with people? We're talking today, if you're just tuning in, about journalism, about the trouble with the Alaska Dispatch News, and how I think that we're all in agreement that we want to see the paper survive and continue, and why it's important from our perspective. We also want to hear from our audience about their perspective on news. We've got some emails that I'll go over here in a minute. But Julia, in the years that you've been doing work in journalism, how has that conversation changed with the public?
The conversation about why news is important? Man, I don't know. I don't know. I guess I could answer that question from a different point of view. So since I left the paper, I've been writing for national publications like The Washington Post and The Guardian. And I did a story recently that was in the High Country News, right? And that story did really well nationally. It went around on Twitter and that kind of thing. But then the Dispatch picked it up and ran it in the Sunday We Alaskan section. And that was when people in my town said, hey, I read your story and it was good. I thought about it. It was important to me. And when I think about my work as a journalist, I think, you know, what's the most important work that I've felt like I've done? And most of it has been the stuff that makes an impact in my town, where I have been able to do something that makes people more informed at the voting booth, makes people more informed consumers, that lets them know about something that, you know, people who are suffering in their community who can be helped. And, you know, and that's the job of a newspaper. It's really just to be useful to its readers. It's just that. So think about the ways in which you use the paper besides cutting out those coupons. You know, you find out about what's going on in your town, makes you smarter, helps you to do, you know, and makes you smarter about like important things that go on, crimes that happen, political decisions. Reporters are attending those meetings that you don't have to go to. So it's really an organ of the community. It's a repository for information, and as well as a sort of a writer of history. It keeps a granular history of families that goes on over time. There is a file in the newspaper archives of the Anchorage Times that's at the university now with my grandmother and my grandfather's picture in it when they first came to Alaska. So newspapers do that thing of writing history in a town and keeping an archive of it, which is invaluable in this day and age as well.
So the idea of trust with the public, we've got a couple of emails that sort of address that. One is from someone who says that if we're taking money from oil organizations, oil companies, then this person feels that they can't trust that the stations aren't going to be beholden to these corporations. And that also, that too often coverage amounts to mere stenography with he said, she said bent. And as long as the reporter records an opposing viewpoint, then the story is deemed adequate and it plays. It seems a bit of an oversimplification, I would say. And I would resist the presumption that just because news organizations get money from corporate sponsors, that means we're going to change the way we approach stories. I always challenge people when they just say that we're the liberal media to look at our body of work and then come back to me and give me examples of what they mean by that. And we had another email that, and Paula, I want to go to you for a moment, and then we're going to get Dave Parker on the phone and get his perspective. But another email from a listener who says that she believes journalism is going downhill because of the insistence on giving equal time for dissenting views. When there are apparent facts and someone has a different opinion, why is it that dissent so often is given equal status? There's so much spin because so many opinions are presented as potential facts, and we know people gravitate toward the opinion that best supports their view. And also disparaging, also being upset by the comments that come after stories, which is a different conversation altogether. But Paula, thinking about those things, that trust factor, money has to come from somewhere to keep professional journalists in newsrooms and traveling to stories. It takes a lot to provide for a broadcast entity. It takes a lot to run a printing press. What should that relationship be, and how can we help the public know that they can trust news sources?
Well, the United States has mostly a commercial news system. Of course, NPR, PBS are exceptions to that. But we have a commercial system for the most part, for most of our news. And that means we accept and have accepted for 200 years, more than that, a system in which someone is paying for the news. And in the last 150 years, it's been advertisers are paying for the news, that they essentially are buying eyeballs on whether it's the newspaper or eyeballs in television so that they can get their products out there. And by doing so, they're supporting news gathering in a community. Of course, with NPR, with KAKM, it's a little bit different because you have to rely on both private donors, so people sitting at home writing checks saying, hey, I think I like the mission of what they're doing, and then corporations supporting you. And for the most part, we've decided that we can live with that corporate support because we know that there's a line, and sometimes the line is pretty, in newsrooms, it's pretty definitive that this is where advertising is, and this is where news is, and you don't cross that line. And there are entities where that is blurring, but for the most part, we've accepted that if we're going to have news in our communities, it has to be because some entity, Fred Meyer, ConocoPhillips, is paying for it.
Well, and I would suggest also that in some business settings, there may be pressure from the business side to blur that line, but every reporter I've ever known mightily resists that and pushes back against it, as they should, to keep that line bright between the business side and the news side of things. And I would just put out to the public that is a conversation that we have quite often in newsrooms about what our role is, as opposed to who has to raise the money to support the jobs that we do. And no one comes into our newsroom and says, hey, it'd be really great if you did a story about this corporation because they're supporting you. So we don't look at those things when we're approaching news. We look at what the news is and the best way to present it to the public, and that's what we're all about. We've got Dave Parker joining us by phone now. Dave is a former longtime Anchorage Police Department public information officer and police officer. And Dave certainly has worked with our newsroom through the years, answered the phone, it seemed like, just about any time of the day or night when something was going on, which was always great, greatly helpful for us. Hello, Mr. Parker.
Hello. So good to hear your voice.
Great to hear yours as well. Thanks so much for joining us. So, Dave, give us, as someone who spent many years answering reporter questions, give us your take on why that work, that relationship, is so important.
Well, the relationship, I can speak from the law enforcement perspective. The relationship that we have with the news is one that has to be based on trust. And trust is something that you don't just get automatically. It has to be earned. And so our approach has been to try to explain police work and what is happening in our town in the criminal milieu and the public safety milieu to the public. Lots of times it's misunderstood. TV, movies, they give people the totally wrong impression of really what goes on. our job is to make sure that we get the information out to the people who own the police department. One of the issues that I continually hammered on with the officers and the detectives that I dealt with is the fact that we do not own the police department. This is the people's police department. It's not the mayor's police department. It's not the governor's state troopers. It's the people's troopers and officers and department. So the important thing is that the truth get out, and that builds trust. And when we goof up, when we have a problem, we have to be honest and honorable about it and present that to the public, but the public needs to hear. The thing that concerns us, and I think most law enforcement officers get a negative taste for the media, the thing that happens there is often we feel like the news media is not getting out the truth. Now, obviously, there are things we can't share in the course of an investigation. The things that we can't share by law regarding like officer discipline and things like that. But it's important that that truth get out. And that's where a lot of officers get kind of a negative taste for news media. Maybe a reporter will go to press or go on camera without the whole story, or they may feel like there's a bias or a slant. And the truth is the thing that will dispel that, that mistrust. And so building trust is extremely important for us.
Absolutely. Trust and honesty, the truth is absolutely what journalists should always be seeking and putting out to the public with proper context. Can you give us some examples of how the information you provided, I'm sure you can, but I'm kind of putting you on the spot to do this quickly.
Okay.
Can you give us some examples of information you provided to reporters, and in turn they wrote it up in stories, that really helped make a difference in public safety or information during a fast-moving crisis? We've got this terrible situation in Texas right now. We have nothing to compare that to contemporary times here, especially in the Anchorage area or in the state. But what were some stories that you helped get information out on that really did make a big difference for the public?
Well, several of the key murder cases that I think of, when that barista was killed, when the nurse was killed, it was the public that really came forward with information. So informing the public was extremely important to the process of the investigation and apprehending the people responsible. When we had issues like an officer who was accused of rape, we were very, very open about everything that we could be open about in that investigation and ask for the public's assistance in finding more victims and additional information, things that would help the detectives do their job and make a case.
All right. Well, thank you, Dave, for those clear illustrations. And we are going to, I appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll have more discussion, more questions, and more conversation about the future of journalism and why it's important as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com.
The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft in airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing journalism and the importance of getting good, clear, honest, contextualized information out to the public. Our numbers here are 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We've got some guests in the studio today, Michael Carey and Julia O'Malley, both former Anchorage Daily News reporters, columnists. And Paula Bancaro is the head of the University of Alaska Anchorage Journalism Department. And all three are in the studio with us today. Michael, you had some thoughts about this idea of the cross, the firewall between news and advertising.
Well, I was thinking about advertising in the context that we were discussing it here. The biggest crisis in advertising is there's not enough of it. The newspapers and media organizations need a lot more advertising. And there are all these, you know, as one newspaper executive said to me, I think I would have done things differently if I knew Craigslist was going to come along and just about put me out of business. Mm-hmm. There's also been a long-standing debate about virtue in advertising, and the search for virtuous advertisers or ones you can morally approve of gets to be very difficult. Some people don't like the church's advertising in the paper. And then in the 60s and 70s, not so much now, at places like the East Bay Other and the many of the alternative newspapers, the Village Voice and so forth, there are big controversies in the newsroom about accepting advertisements for strip clubs. Many of the women and some of the men thought it was demeaning. The people who ran the newspapers thought, hey, it pays. Mm-hmm. So the search for the virtuous advertiser is a very difficult search.
Because who gets to decide what virtue you're going to use?
That's
Julia.
The thing about ADN.com, though, is that it's this huge, it has this massive audience. Like, why would that not be attractive to advertisers? Why would you not be building relationships with advertisers, trying to experiment and innovate, using that audience, and not just the audience of the website, which reaches more Alaskans than anybody else, but also the reach of their social media platforms, which also reach a ton of Alaskans and people outside with an interest in Alaska. And social media allows you to curate your ad audience so that you can point ads at precisely the type of person that you know is going to be interested.
Annoying. I bought something from L.L. Bean, and my screen is just jumping with L.L. Bean.
I know that they follow you.
And well, I think part of the problem, too, is that people go to two places right now for digital ads. They go to Facebook and they go to Google. And they have, stopped thinking about local news organizations as a place to advertise. And they should be doing that, because that's exactly where you get, if you want people in Anchorage to go buy from your boutique, that's the way to advertise to them.
The advertising can't look the same. No. It cannot look the same as print. So you can't just have like a picture with words on it. It has to be dynamic. And that's where, you know, if you're going to spend a whole bunch of money, Alice, you could have put money into innovating in that regard.
And I would say that, you know, when we hear from our audience, our listeners, our supporters, that get upset, like the email that we had about, if you're taking money from oil companies, then I don't feel that I can trust you. We don't know in the newscast what's going to run in the credit breaks. That's why sometimes you might hear a story about a plane crash followed by some real cheerful airline company's sponsor credit, because when we're building the newscast, I don't know what's in those credits, and I don't want to know, because I don't want to even unconsciously reshape how we put the news together based on an uncomfortable moment. You know, when that happens, we're like, ugh, that, you know, that's unfortunate.
But it is more
it is the way it is. And so that is the firewall that I would commit to our audience. We absolutely have firmly in place. And I would say that I believe that the majority of valid news organizations, that you can look at the history of their work and the body of how they've covered things, they hold those same tenets also and take it very seriously. I wanted to talk a little bit about media literacy, too. We hear a lot of stories referred to as fake news these days, whether it is or not. But there is a lot of noise out there. There is a lot of fake content, particularly online, that is presented, it's nonsense, presented as facts. Here's an example, and it's at our website. If you want to go to alaskapublic.org and look at this screen grab, of an example that Brian Brett Schneider, who is a climate scientist in Anchorage and joins us once a week to talk about Alaska's changing climate, he tweeted out a picture of a shark swimming down a highway.
So did Steve Heimel.
and I'm not sure of the origin. Maybe Brian's listening. He can call in. But the point is, he posted it before the flooding started in Houston. And he said, you know, I wonder how long it's going to take before someone posts this picture and claims it was from the scene of the disaster. And sure enough, it happened. Somebody posted, believe it or not, here's a shark swimming down the highway in Houston. It's an illustration of how difficult it's become to separate truth, properly sourced, vetted news stories from fake news. So what do we do? How do we help the public vet information in order to confirm it? Paula, how much media literacy is being taught at the university level?
Well, I'm happy to say we developed a class called Media Literacy, and we started offering it last year, and it is available as a social science general ed requirement, so anyone in the university can take it and get credit for it. And the whole purpose is to help students differentiate between what is real news, what is not, what is advertising, what is sponsored content, for example, because there is a dearth of, there's a lot of information coming at us, but there's a dearth of the ability to wade through it successfully. And that's what we're hoping to do, is to help students think critically about their media consumption. And a lot of people are now media creators. I mean, if you're sharing that picture of the shark, you are essentially a media creator, mm-hmm. and you are feeding into this ecosystem in which people now don't believe anything because by golly, I saw one thing that was incorrect. Well, it's more complex than that. So what are reliable sources? Trying to help students identify what are reliable sources of news, and then try to pick apart what are things that might be useful, but you have to know what it is you're looking for.
How do you, Michael, Carrie, when family and friends come to you and say, help me understand where I should go. What can I trust? There's so much out there. It's coming at me 24/7 from a million different platforms. How do you talk to people about where to go to find information that they can trust and believe in?
Well, the obvious thing here is you have to be a critical reader. And I think you have to be careful to put aside your partisan blinders in some case, politics being the obvious example of this kind of partisanship, because I have just concluded that people are willing to believe the absolute worst about people they don't like politically. People have called me up and said, did you know Bill Clinton killed his dog? No, I didn't know that. How do you know that? Well, he's just the kind of person who'd do that. That is the absolute opposite of anything that could be called critical thinking. So, and the other clear thing would be, you know, the major newspapers of this country are probably the Los Angeles Times, the New York Times, the Post in Washington are probably going to be on many things, if not most things, a better source than not specialists, but just the average person who posts something on Facebook.
I want to go to the phones for just a moment. Jean is in Fairbanks. Hi, Jean.
Oh, hello. Thanks for taking the call, Lori. I'd like to mostly thank Alice Rogoff for her vision. Nobody's really talked about what a great thing this presence of a real newspaper in Alaska has been. Alice had the vision to see Alaska in a larger context, and she's put it into the newspaper. A perfect example is the Friday and Saturday Arctic Now section of the paper, which puts the Arctic into the world and discusses Alaska's place in it and presents interesting news and science and exploration and business going on in the north. In the same manner, I think Alice has the vision to see Alaska's place in the world in terms of oil exploration, in terms of politics. I think one of the reasons the newspaper has had such a hard time is exactly what Michael's saying, is that this is a pretty conservative state that wants to be, as our Fairbanks paper has done, shielded from the real news of what's going on in the National Guard. I remember that the otherwise sometimes quite good Fairbanks Daily News Miner presented the case of the great scandal going on in our own Alaska statewide National Guard as recruiters being unfaithful to their wives. Now, they didn't even have, local newspaper didn't even have the good sense or the courage to say that these were exploiting teenage girls who might be recruited into the National Guard or who might be the sister of someone who was being recruited into the National Guard and were 17 years old.
Okay,
and were
Jean,
gotten drunk and so on.
Thanks.
So
you're getting kind of far afield here, and I want to bring it back in and let our panelists respond to your thoughts about the difference between what Alice presented through the Anchorage Daily News and some other media outlets. But before we do that, thanks for the call. Before we do that, I had an email that I wanted to also relay. This is someone who says, it's interesting to hear you claim business support doesn't influence what you write and not discuss the anti-business messaging that was common in the ADN and led to fewer subscribers, advertisers, and bankruptcy. It was common practice, this person claims, at the ADN to allow anti-business folks and reporters to submit pieces with information, misinformation, and refuse to run pro-business pieces without rewriting them to the newspaper's liking and watering down the message. Now, we've heard from two different folks, one who is highly supportive of what she perceived as the vision that Alice brought to the paper, and someone else just wholesale flaming the paper. It seems like that's kind of the crux of the issue that we're discussing here and how we have two ways of seeing what's presented in the news media. Reactions, I know, Julia, you were listening to the phone call earlier, and it looked like you had some thoughts about how to respond to that.
It's an art form to be a newspaper publisher. You know, and especially to be one in Alaska, which is a small place. And anybody who's involved with business is going to tell you that the number one rule of business is relationships. And I am not sure that it was Alice's interest to cultivate relationships with small business owners in Anchorage. And so the other thing that happened with the transition to the Dispatch was that there was no more editorial voice, sort of unsigned editorial voice, which you can say that goes a lot of different ways. But the editorial pages, also because of the contraction of the staff and various other things, there wasn't a hand, and Michael Carey, who was an editorial page editor for many years, there wasn't a hand guiding that. There wasn't the careful attention paid to the facts, and that can do a lot of damage, especially when people perceive that you can, like, write something and have it submitted to the paper rather than a reporter who goes through a careful editing and vetting process. So the editor, the tact that was taken with the editorial page could have done some damage, as well as, like, the lack of face time and commitment to building relationships with advertisers in Anchorage, which was the base. On the other side of that, Alice's interest was sort of presenting Alaska to the wider world. And we can talk, you know, you can talk about whether that was good or bad, but I do think that, you know, trying to make the Alaskan paper a player in a larger conversation about the Arctic is probably a positive thing. However, sustainability of a paper is the number one rule of a publisher, and I would say that she failed miserably at that.
Michael, as a former editorial page editor, your thoughts about editorials?
Well, a couple things. Following up on what Julie was saying about Alice's performance, the chief responsibility, the major responsibility, in some ways the only responsibility of the captain of the ship is to bring the vessel home safely.
Amen.
And that did not happen in this case. I wanted to say something earlier when Mr. Parker was talking about getting at the truth and putting the truth out there. That's a noble aspiration, but so much of what we have is differing perspectives. Now, the person who called up and complained about the editorial page and the lies that get into the business coverage and so forth has a differing perspective than the people who are putting the paper together. And as far as the police go, a really good example is we've had cases in this town in which a police officer shot somebody who was behaving very badly in front of his family, his or her family, and the family has a totally different perspective of what happened than the police department, and it's going to be impossible to get them to accept the truth as explained by the police department. That's why people sue.
Absolutely. Paula, did you want to follow up on some of what we've heard?
I will say that we had a period, and it was like a six-month period that was really exciting when the Dispatch News was still an online entity, and they were going full throttle. And then the Anchorage Daily News had gotten McClatchy to finally put some money in the paper. Mm-hmm. And it was a really great time for journalism. It was like 6 months of like, woohoo, you know, really good reporting and people being competitive in this city. Most communities, 90%, more than that probably, of cities do not have competing newspapers anymore. And TV news still, I mean, we have, thankfully, some good TV news outlets here, but they're not competing in the same way with newspapers for the news coverage of a community. And I will say that I think having an editorial page which is edited and curated in a stronger way is something I hope the new owners do for the ADN.
All right, let's go back to the phones for a moment. Barbara is in Healy. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I got on because I started to say that they stopped delivering the Fairbanks paper to us here this year. The editor came down and explained why, and it is financial, and I get that. And we do actually have the paper delivered to a main place where we can go get it, except not Saturdays and Sundays, but that's okay, too. I get it. The Internet has taken over so much, as the troubles we've had with post offices. So I, however, am limited income, and the Internet's too expensive for me to have at my house. I get my news and have traditionally for 30-plus years from KUAC and the Fairbanks Daily Newswire. It always came here. We used to get the Anchorage paper here, too, probably 20 years ago. And don't anymore, and may I say, the Anchorage Daily News was an excellent newspaper. They wrote so many Pulitzers. It was a joy to read. So I made a couple of points here, so I'm going to try to follow my points. First of all, the media literacy is huge and should be taught from kindergarten up. Every reporter, no matter how much they're trying to do the facts, has a point of view, whether they try to leave it out or not and present it without opinions, they do. And one needs to learn to say, what is their point? Who are they trying to reach? Are they, you know, do you know what I'm saying there?
That's what your editor's for.
Hugely, hugely. And that's what education would be for. So everything we read, we question. Statistics are huge. So let me get to my points here. We need daily information up here as far as weather, safety. We need some world opinion. KUAC brings that to me now almost exclusively. Let's see, I had another point. don't speculate. I hate that in the news. Sometimes, especially TV, is so much hype, they don't have anything to say, so they speculate about where it might go, and we can figure that out from the facts.
Yeah, well, and you have definitely raised some interesting points, and you know, one of the points, your final one there, Barbara, about speculation, when a lot of the news outlets, broadcast outlets on cable news went to 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week coverage, that's when a lot of things get amplified that probably did not need to be in order to fill that time. And so that's where I think what you mentioned, some of the speculation comes in. And you're right, that can get very dangerous. We shouldn't stray into the I think or maybe or any of those areas as reporters and news people. Michael, another thought before we take a quick break here?
Well, on the other hand, newspapers all the time, especially on the sports page, run speculation pieces. Who's going to win the World Series? People get paid to write that.
It's going to be the Royals.
Another excellent point. And on that note, we're going to take a short break. And Talk of Alaska will continue in just a moment.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. One thing that we often hear about reporters and news people is that reporters, journalists are observers, not participants. So what does that mean to you, Michael?
That means you should, as little as possible, be the subject of the news, although the Dispatch certainly has made itself the subject of the news with very good reason. On the other hand, when Jeff Bezos bought the Washington Post, the Post became the subject of the news, and for many people, as the president says, the failing New York Times becomes the subject of the news. But we do go to meetings, and when a variety of Tea Party leaders came up here, I went there and mingled with them and got to hear totally different points of view than I'm used to hearing every day. And we have to deal with different kinds of people all the time. That's one thing you learn, is to listen to people who are very different than you, and people who are in journalism get to be good at that.
Julia or Paula, do you want to comment on the idea of being an observer of the human condition and not a participant of what's going on at any one point in time?
Well, that's what drew me to journalism, actually, was I liked just to observe and not to necessarily form deep opinions about things. And I think what's hard is nowadays students that I teach see so many opinions they sometimes don't realize that there's actually an ethical way to produce news, and it requires trying to put yourself out of the story. Get yourself out of the story. Get yourself out of making opinions about it. Take the bumper stickers off your car and just talk to people. And that will help you see a wider view of society.
Well, and certainly we all do, as journalists, as reporters, have opinion. We have life experience. The goal is always to keep that out of our work. And as you said, don't put that perception out there that you might maybe bias. Don't have campaign signs in your yard. Don't have bumper stickers that promote a politician. Make sure that you're working as hard as you can to keep your own personal biases out of your stories. And that's what editors and colleagues are for in newsrooms. All the time, reporters in newsrooms are saying, who else should I talk to? Am I too close to this? What else do I need to include in this story to make sure that it's all important aspects of it are fairly represented? Earlier, when I was introducing you as guests, we talked, I mentioned in the interest of full disclosure that you're on Alaska Public Media's Community Advisory Board. The reason we do that, the disclosure, is so that people know fully well what our relationships are with people that we're interviewing or we're talking to or we're putting in stories, so that they can trust we are letting them know. Might mean nothing at all, but at least you know this relationship exists. Mm-hmm. And that's how you have to help work to build trust among your audience. Let's take one more quick call here. Jim is in Eagle River. Hi, Jim.
Hi. My initial comment quickly became almost drowned in the more complex and intricate insights of your panel. I wanted to say, as a 40-year subscriber to Anchorage Daily News and then the Alaska Dispatch, how appreciative I am of a quality local newspaper, and commend both organs for all they have done. The Anchorage Daily News was at its best when they were competing with the Anchorage Times in that final blow-by-blow. And the Alaska Dispatch has improved even what the Anchorage Daily News did when they took over. Then I hear all the inner goings on and the finances and whatever. So my comments may be a little naive. But secondly, I wanted to say that I trust sources for facts, and this whole idea of fake news comes from a president who relies on fake news and not the facts of more trusted and legitimate fact-finding organizations. He, you know, has bought into, whether it's the birther movement or the Muslims cheering at the tower coming down. I say that I can say almost predictably that anyone who denies climate change, I say, well, I bet that person listens to Fox News. Because they're not listening to news, they're listening to the opinions that are slipped in as news.
Well, so. Thank you so much, Jim. We only have a couple minutes left, and I appreciate your thoughts, your reflecting on this. I want to give our panel one more time, to, a minute to reflect. But also an email that came in that said, from someone who says, I've certainly read biased news reporting. This person references Fox, the coverage of White House issues. And she says, as a regulated healthcare provider, wondering whether journalism would benefit from a more formal type of professional self-regulation so that journalists are registered, that standardized. Now, Paula, you're in the business of teaching journalism and helping to get people prepared for that. Just a quick thought about more regulation for reporters.
Well, if we were regulated, the state would regulate us, right? The government would regulate us, and then that would defeat the whole purpose of being a watchdog. So that's why we are not licensed. And it has problems. I mean, there are some downsides to not having that credentialing system that some free societies do have. We've just decided, no, we're not going to be licensed, because that would mean we'd have to get the government's imprimatur, and we don't want that.
Absolutely. Michael, last
thoughts? I believe there are several states, Minnesota being one, that at least at one time had boards of journalists who would vet or complaint, certainly. This has not been a regulated business going all the way back to in our country, and it's clear that it does best when the government is not telling
when
us
it's
what
free
to do.
Of, yeah,
when they're only misleading us, not telling us what to do.
Julia, a couple seconds here.
We are regulated. We're regulated by our readers and our listeners, and they can call us on our stuff and make us correct it. And that's the most important thing about local news, is that relationship you have with your news anchor, with your reporter on the radio, and with your reporter.
It's true. I rely a lot on the audience to call us up and say, hey, you missed this or you missed that. Glad to hear it. Thanks for listening to all of you. Thanks for my panelists. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. Boating accidents happen, even to experienced boaters and on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make those you care about promise to be rescue ready by always wearing a life jacket when in an open boat or on deck, attaching the engine cutoff device when underway, and carrying emergency communication and distress signaling devices on their person. Visit pledgetolive.org for more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.